Welcome to part two of The Second Bullet. This is the second episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange by Anna Catherine Green. Then a hand began to struggle with the lock, and the door, slowly opening, disclosed the woman clad in a hastily donned wrapper and giving every evidence of extreme fright. "Oh!" she exclaimed, seeing only the compassionate faces of her neighbors. "You heard it, too! A pistol shot from there! There! My husband's room! I have not dared to go! Oh, have mercy and see if anything is wrong! It is so still! So still! And only a moment ago the baby was crying! Mrs. Saunders! Mrs. Saunders! Why is it so still?" She had fallen into her neighbor's arms. The hand with which she had pointed out a certain door had sunk to her side, and she appeared to be on the verge of collapse. The officer eyed her sternly while noting her appearance, which was that of a woman hastily risen from bed. "Where were you?" he asked. "Not with your husband and child, or you would know what had happened there."
"I was sleeping down the hall," she managed to gasp out. "I'm not well. Oh, why do you all stand still and do nothing? My baby's in there. Go! Go!"
And with sudden energy, she sprang upright, her eyes wide open and burning, her small, well-featured face white as the linen she sought to hide. The officer demurred no longer. In another instant, he was trying the door at which she was again pointing. It was locked. Glancing back at the woman, now cowering almost to the floor, he pounded at the door and asked the man inside to open. No answer came back. With a sharp turn, he glanced again at the wife. "You say that your husband is in this room?" She nodded, gasping faintly.
"And the child?"
He turned back, listened, then beckoned to Mr. Saunders. "We shall have to break our way in," said he. "Put your shoulder well to the door. Now!" The hinges of the door creaked. The lock gave way. This special officer weighed 275, as he found out the next day, and a prolonged and sweeping crash told the rest. Mrs. Hammond gave a low cry, and straining forward from where she crouched in terror on the floor, searched the faces of the two men for some hint of what they saw in the dimly lit space beyond. Something dreadful. Something which made Mr. Saunders come rushing back with a shout. "Take her away! Take her to our apartment, Jenny! She must not see!" Not see? He realized the futility of his words as his gaze fell on the young woman who had risen up at his approach and now stood gazing at him, without speech, without movement, but with a glare of terror in her eyes, which gave him his first realization of human misery. His own glance fell before it. If he had followed his instinct, he would have fled the house rather than answer the question of her look and the attitude of her whole frozen body. Perhaps in mercy to his speechless terror, perhaps in mercy to herself, she was the one who at last found the word which voiced their mutual anguish.
"Dead?"
No answer. None was needed.
"And my baby?"
Oh, that cry. It curdled the hearts of all who heard it. It shook the souls of men and women both inside and outside the apartment. Then all was forgotten in the wild rush she made. The wife and mother had flung herself upon the scene, and side by side, with a not unmoved policeman, stood looking down upon the desolation made in one fatal instant. In her home and heart. They lay there together, both past help, both quite dead. The child had simply been strangled by the weight of his father's arm, which lay directly across the upturned little throat. But the father was the victim of the shot they had heard. There was blood on his breast and a pistol in his hand. Suicide. The horrible truth was patent. No wonder they wanted to hold the young widow back. Her neighbor, Mrs. Saunders, crept in on tiptoe and put her arms about the swaying, fainting woman. But there was nothing to say. Absolutely nothing. At least, they thought not. But when they saw her throw herself down, not by her husband, but by the child, and drag it out from under that strangling arm, and hug and kiss it and call out wildly for a doctor, the officer endeavored to interfere and yet could not find the heart to do so. Though he knew the child was dead and should not, according to all the rules of the coroner's office, be moved before that official arrived. Yet, because no mother could be convinced of a fact like this, he let her sit with it on the floor and try all her little arts to revive it, while he gave orders to the janitor and waited himself for the arrival of doctor and coroner. She was still sitting there in wide-eyed misery, alternately fondling the little body and drawing back to consult its small set features for some sign of life, when the doctor came, and after one look at the child, drew it softly from her arms and laid it quietly in the crib from which his father had evidently lifted it but a short time before. Then he turned back to her and found her on her feet, upheld by her two friends. She had understood his action, and without a groan had accepted her fate. Indeed, she seemed incapable of any further speech or action. She was staring down at her husband's body, which she for the first time seemed fully to see. Was her look one of grief or of resentment for the part he had played so unintentionally in her child's death? It was hard to tell. And when, with slowly rising finger, she pointed to the pistol so tightly clutched in the other outstretched hand, no one there, and by this time the room was full, could foretell what her words would be when her tongue regained its usage and she could speak. What she did say was this.
The next episode of The Second Bullet will be out next Monday. This production copyrighted 2010 Stefania Lintenbahn. www.stephsvoiceforyou.co.uk.